Another group that's been critical of what's been going on college campuses is Campus Watch, and it's a project of Daniel Pipes' Middle East Forum, and it's started after 9/11 to critique Middle East studies in North America. And Asif Romorowski is a Campus Watch Associate Fellow at the Middle East Institute, and he's written a forthcoming article about the new handbook that we're going to be talking about a little later in the program for the Washington Times. And I asked him to describe what Campus Watch does.
The initial goal of Campus Watch is really to highlight and look at what is being taught on college campuses with regard to Middle East studies. It's become a watchdog for the topic of Middle East studies across North America, why there is imbalance when talking about Israel and the Middle East, why there is intolerance, analytical failures that we have discovered when talking about these topics, and why what is predominantly sold in many college campuses when it deals with the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is a very one-sided pro-Palestinian agenda without showing the other side.
Can you give us an example of something that's been a problem?
Well, looking at these analytical and Middle East failures in Middle East studies, I think that Columbia University has experienced a significant amount of attention 3 years ago when a movie entitled Columbia Unbecoming exposed the one-sidedness of their Middle East Studies department there. There have been incidents where students have been forced to go to pro-Palestinian rallies, otherwise they lose a grade. There have been intolerance in the classrooms, people trying to express other views, saying that they can't. The metaphor and the idea that Israel is now the Goliath and the Palestinians are now the David is a notion that is very prevalent amongst many Middle East Studies departments. The fact that you have on many college campuses pro-Palestinian conferences that are calling for boycott and divestment, and these are all symptoms of a larger problem. But what's happening in many college classrooms is that a professor is using the podium of the college classroom to promote his own political agenda without any room for describing or talking about the other side.
What most concerns you? Is it what goes on in a classroom, or is it the things that go on outside the classroom, the boycotts, the speakers who come to college campuses? Are these are separate issues, right?
Right. They're symptoms of a larger picture. But most concerning to me is really the education. I mean, I'm most concerned about what students are getting in the college classroom. I think that as parents, as alumni, people who are associated with different universities should be concerned about what the universities are putting forth when it comes to teaching Middle East studies, the Israeli-Palestinian dynamic especially. I mean, you're paying a significant amount of money for tuition, and the minimum you deserve is amount of balance when it comes to talking about the topics. And that's what is not being portrayed and is not being received in different campuses.
Well, what do you think of as balance? Because some people think that, you know, balance is something that's, if you have an Israeli and a Palestinian, then you've got balance. But that's not necessarily balance. There's all sorts of different kinds of balance.
And to that point, that's one of the biggest myths that we're talking about. I mean, in many departments, you think if you have an Israeli, then you have you definitely have a balanced department, regardless of the fact that that Israeli could be a far left or a post-Zionist individual who doesn't believe in the state of Israel or is very anti-Israel and is very far to the left. I mean, I think that when I talk about balance, I think you have to have a concrete presentation of right and left issues. And when you're in these departments, the general field of Middle East studies, which encompasses history, political science, international relations, sociology, you're dealing with politics. And for sure, the study of politics is important, but it's important to also describe what leads up to what and what is actually taking place. One of the most well-read scholarly works that is being taught on many college campuses is Edward Said's Orientalism, a book that has had a tremendous amount of impact on how Middle East studies are being taught and how the Orient is being portrayed. So many college campuses and many departments teach Orientalism, but on the other hand, they don't teach the critique of Orientalism by Bernard Lewis, Islam in the West, which is also widely supposed to be widely read and should be widely read to understand what Said meant when he wrote his book. That's what I mean when I talk about balance, showing a one-sided understanding of the Middle East without explaining the other side.
You're listening to Worldview from Chicago Public Radio. I'm Jerome McDonald speaking with Asaf Romorowski, and he is going to have an article next week in the Washington Times talking about the Task Force on Middle East Anthropology's handbook for scholars and teachers. Well, what do you think about a group of teachers who operate within the Middle East context, and they create a handbook to help people out in case they're accused of having a bias? They want to know what to do. Is that a good idea?
Well, I think it's a byproduct of what's been happening post 9/11. I think the fact that now that people are concerned, especially within MESA, the Middle East Studies Association of America, which is the umbrella organization of Middle East studies across North America, is quite telling. And I think a lot of it has to do with the impact of the work organizations like we, like ourselves, Campus Watch, have done looking at these issues. I think that they're concerned about what really academic freedom stands for, and looking at these issues in a more circumspect lenses to see what is being said and what is not being said. What you're finding on many college campuses and what's been the defense mechanism has been academic freedom. I mean, everything is acceptable under the guise of academic freedom, even though it could be anti-American. But it's academic freedom. You can say whatever you want. And I think now that people are looking at academic freedom, there should be like a real understanding of what that actually means.
What do you think it means?
Well, I think what it deserves and what it really means is really the ability to talk about the issues in a very serious and a concrete way, but also in a balanced as well as a well-documented way. I mean, not everything can be described as academic freedom. I mean, you have here a situation where in a type of an Orwellian inversion, where academic freedoms means that Israelis are more perverse than others. And it's this is what really began to protect professors from being fired for their own politics. I mean, the fact that they can really use Israelis as a scapegoat when you're describing the Israeli-Palestinian dynamic.
Well, do they really just mean Israeli policies, the policies of the Israeli government toward Palestinians? It's not really the Israelis.
Right. But I think that they're describing the policies, what is happening between Israelis and Palestinians. For example, the fence. Especially now with the release of Carter's book, the description of the apartheid wall. Despite the fact that Israel is far from being apartheid at all, but the fact that it is being perceived as such and as being that terminology has been adopted by many anti-Israel groups, many anti-Zionist groups, Durban, the convention, the racism convention that took place in Durban in South Africa. The Zionism is racism was one of the most prevalent slogans you saw all over the place. And the fact that it is perceived as such and has been sold as fact, despite the fact that it's fallacy, has become really what has been perpetuating a lot of what's happening today. I think today we are at the third stage of what I would define as anti-Semitism. The fact that anti-Semitism today has become Israel has become a symbol of anti-Semitism. So people can say, for example, that I don't hate you because you are because you are Jewish, but I hate you because you're quote unquote a Zionist. Israel has become a proxy for anti-Semitism today.
That's, I think, something that a lot of people, a lot of these scholars are concerned about. They don't want to be tarred with this anti-Semitism brush because they don't feel like they're anti-Semitic if they oppose the State of Israel's policies. Those are two different things.
correct. But what you're seeing today, I mean, the reason that the Israeli-Palestinian dynamic has been taught in so many camps and there's been such a focus on the issue is because, first of all, the Palestinians have been sold as the underdog of the Arab world, which they are. But the criticism has been not towards the Arab world, which has not taken them in, but against the Israelis, who have treated them, well, actually, the first one to take care of the Palestinians post-67. They are the ones who created schools for the Palestinians. They're the ones who actually built homes for the Palestinians, but that offer was rejected by then Yasser Arafat because that would derail from the process of recruiting for the PLO. There has been a mixture of terminology here. I mean, the issue of teaching politics and the reason it has become, especially when it comes to the Israeli-Palestinian dynamic, so delicate is because it impacts how we perceive the Middle East. But anybody who studies the Middle East and knows about the Middle East, I mean, there has to be an understanding of where these actions stem from historically and looking at these issues in a thematic and an academic way. What is not happening today is a lack of balance where people are teaching their own politics here, and that the Palestinians are sold as the one who are being oppressed by the Israelis. I think that one of the more common terminologies is the use of the word occupation.
And I mean, you object to the use of the word occupation?
Well, I think that the positive thing, for example, just going back to this, the handbook, and it suggests that, you know, if somebody challenges the word occupation, then you can talk about the political terms. I mean, about alternative terms, talking about disputed territories, for example, and not necessarily about occupation. The occupation has become the symbol of quote-unquote Palestinian oppression. I think that it's an accurate term. I mean, one can talk about different terms of describing the situation, and I think that's a positive thing, and the booklet should be commended for that because, again, these perverse terms are not necessarily the accurate terms. For example, the wall is not really a wall. It's a fence. I mean, really...
Isn't that kind of up to the eye of the beholder? If somebody looks at it and thinks, well, that's a wall, I know there's sections that are barbed wire, and I know there are sections that are concrete, and I know there are sections where there's roads running on either side of it, and I know there are sections where there's nothing but...
But it was specifically done as a fence and not as a wall, because a wall connotes something permanent and something that was a border. I mean, that was not the intention of Ariel Sharon, then prime minister at the time, when he built the fence. The idea was this was going to prevent terrorist activities, which it does. And it's proven itself, because the areas where there is no fence, terrorist activity takes place. And the fact of the matter is that nobody talks about the fact that it also protects Palestinians. And that's another issue that is sold like it's only one-sided. And that's part of the issue, the fact that there's only a very small lens of looking at the microcosm of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict as really as a... what Palestinians define as an occupation of Israel, of what is taking place, which is not the case at all. Because if you look at democracies and what is taking place in Israel between Israelis and Palestinians, the freedom that, for example, Arab Israelis have, they will not find that anywhere else in the Arab world, with the exception of Israel, where you will find that. And, you know, on a positive note, I would say that if Palestinians were to adopt some kind of concept of democratization, the odds are they will adopt the Israeli democracy because they see how it works well for Arab Israelis. I mean, for the first time now, we have an Arab minister in Israel.
A lot of people have looked at Campus Watch and thought negatively about it. I noticed that John Mersheimer and Stephen Walt wrote in their paper in March of 2006 that Campus Watch was founded by passionately pro-Israel neoconservative Jews with the intention of encouraging students to report comments or behavior that might be considered hostile to Israel, and that it was a transparent attempt to blacklist and intimidate scholars. As time has gone on and Campus Watch has been around for a while, do you find that it's becoming less popular or less respected? I mean, who do you think is winning here? Are you becoming more popular? Are you becoming more respected?
Well, I think that the handbook itself is testimony to the work of Campus Watch, the fact that people are concerned about what is being taught and how the Middle East is being portrayed in different classrooms. I mean, I think that, for example, up until 9/11, the government turned to the academia as a source of information when talking about the issues about what might happen and what is possible because these scholars are studying the Middle East. The fact of the matter is that nobody spoke about a 9/11, with the exception of people like Daniel Pipes, like Samuel Huntington, like Bernard Lewis, like Martin Kramer. I mean, the fact of the matter is that, I mean, they were marginalized all the years up until 9/11, and they have been talking about a possible 9/11, about the threat of radical Islam, and the need to do something about it. I mean, to be concerned about that threat. And the fact that now, post 9/11, their writings are more acceptable in college classrooms, that's a shift. That's a huge shift in what is taking place. And I think this guide itself, as far as academic freedom, is also a shift in what, and really a inside look into what we should be doing and how we should be teaching the issues, because they have political implications. And as students of the Middle East, we should be concerned. I mean, we're going to be involved as Americans in the Middle East for a very long time, and we have been for a very long time. So it's important to understand the roots and understand the history in order to really have a true understanding of what is taking place, and not something which is gives a skewed view of the reality.
Asaf Romorowski, thanks a lot for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Asaf Romorowski is a Campus Watch Associate Fellow at the Middle East Institute, and he's also a PhD candidate at King's College in London, and he's an Israeli Defense Forces Reserve Liaison Officer to the Kingdom of Jordan. Coming up next, we'll hear from one of the co-authors of the new handbook for instructors on Middle East studies. I'm Jerome McDonnell, and you're listening to Worldview from Chicago Public Radio.